As many of you may know, I'm from New Hampshire. And in southern New Hampshire, in Keene, actually, there's this mountain called Mount Monadnock. It's a 3,100-foot mountain. It's not Mount Everest. But it is allegedly the second most climbed mountain in the world, behind Mount Fuji in little old New Hampshire. I can't verify that, and maybe it's just a story, but there are a lot of people climb this mountain every year. And the last 300 feet of the mountain is above the timberline. It's just bare rock, and it's quite a climb at times. It's a little bit challenging. But what I love is down at the bottom of the mountain, as you're about to begin the climb, there's a sign that says, "Weather conditions above the timberline often change drastically and without warning. Do not attempt this climb unless you are an experienced climber and are equipped to face the possibility of the severest weather changes or conditions. Never climb alone." Some great New Hampshire hospitality for you there. But you never know what's going to happen when you climb a mountain. And the former Colorado Senator Mark Udall said once, "You don't climb mountains without a team. You don't climb mountains without being fit. You don't climb mountains without being prepared. And you don't climb mountains without balancing the risks and rewards. And you never climb a mountain on accident. It has to be intentional." And so we have stories in today's scriptures about people intentionally climbing mountains. And anytime you climb a mountain in scripture, you're going to meet God. And so Abraham, in the first reading, for example, was on a mountain when he was tested. Moses saw the burning bush on a mountain. Moses received the Ten Commandments on a mountain. And Elijah heard the whisper of God on a mountain. And so then in the gospel, Jesus is taking three of his friends up on a mountain. And I think this idea of climbing a mountain is a great metaphor for Lent. It's this intentional time when we go to meet God. And as I see it, there are kind of three fundamental steps. There's the going up the mountain, there's what happens on top of the mountain, then there's coming down the mountain. Now, when we meet Jesus today in the Gospel of Mark, we are halfway through the gospel, and Jesus is symbolically halfway through his ministry. People are beginning to plot against him. His disciples, as we heard last week, are not entirely sure who he is. And he is sensing that there is a good deal of strife and suffering that is coming his way. He needs some perspective. And I think we all do. And Lent is a great time to try to get perspective. You know, we hear in the second reading that if God is for us, who can be against? I think there are so many times where God is trying to be for us, and God says, "But I can't even get on your schedule." And so, sometimes we need perspective because there's a crisis or there's some form of suffering. Sometimes life has just become too routine. Sometimes we are facing a difficult decision or we just need clarity. And so we go up the mountain. Now, as an aside, I would also submit to you that our country collectively really needs some perspective with respect to gun violence. It is way past time to go up the mountain on this one. And I think our young people are calling us to it. But whatever sends us up the mountain, something generally happens on top. Now, in today's reading, it's a very dramatic something that happens. There's this mystical experience for Jesus. His clothes turn brilliant white, clouds surround them, the disciples kind of freak out. Jesus communes with Elijah and Moses. They hear God's voice. I mean, the truth is, we don't really know what happened up there that day. Now, in most interpretations of this passage, the focus is on Jesus being with Elijah and Moses because Jesus is seen by Christians as a peer to them in his ministry. But the theologian and Spiritus board member, Ched Myers, says that what is more significant is that Moses and Elijah had similar mountaintop experiences with God during crucial periods of discouragement in their lives. And their mountaintop experiences helped them continue their work. And so now they show up to help Jesus continue his. And I really love this idea of Moses and Elijah, people who knew discouragement, showing up to affirm Jesus and help him keep on keeping on. It is so important when someone else recognizes us and affirms us on our journey. Father Jim told us last week that when you love someone, you show them that they are beautiful. And Moses and Elijah do this for Jesus today. And I think we need to keep doing this for each other often. Now, this also gets me thinking about the movie Black Panther. I don't know if you've seen it. I would highly recommend it. But I think Black Panther has become such an important cultural phenomenon because black people for so long have been longing for spaces where they can see themselves, their history, their contributions, and their lives reflected in a positive way. And almost every character in the film, and even the entire country of Wakanda, speaks of a great and powerful lineage where black people and African descendants can see themselves reflected as beautiful and capable. And for some people I know, seeing the film along with some friends has actually been a kind of mountaintop experience in and of itself. Now, when we are on the mountaintop, we get this sense of love and belonging that we may not get in our everyday lives. Now, it's not always as grand and profound as we hear in the gospel, but these everyday experiences open something up for us. They reassure us. They give us a sense of connection, or maybe just a knowing that everything is going to be okay. The spiritual writer Anne Lamott talks about three essential prayers that we need to learn to say. Help, thanks, and wow. And she says these mountaintop moments are wow moments because you are almost speechless, but not quite. And she goes on to say that when we are stunned to the place beyond words, spiritually, we're finally starting to get somewhere. And she says that wow is a prayer that we need to say over and over again. Now, there are tons of examples of wow, right? And she even goes on to categorize that there are uppercase wows and lowercase wows. So you can have all kinds if you want. But we might experience wow in nature. I remember last summer being out under the stars watching a meteor shower, and it was just absolutely breathtaking. But it can happen when we're holding a child. It can happen during a meal. It can happen during a conversation, or even watching the Olympics. Wow can happen anywhere, at any time, if we are open to it. Wow can even happen in very busy places. There's a great story of the Trappist monk and mystic Thomas Merton, who was in downtown Louisville, Kentucky, in the middle of the shopping district when this happened to him. He said, "I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people. They were mine and I was theirs. That we could not be alien to one another, even though we were total strangers." But wherever wow happens, it changes not only how we see, but what we see. And I think back a few years ago, I was with my brother-in-law, Chuck, and we were at a Mother's Day gathering. And in our family, the mothers go out to dinner, and the dads and the kids stay at home. And so all the dads are gathered around the grill. We're grilling out, having a good time. I don't know where the kids are, but we were having a good time. And so Chuck is to my right, and he's facing my neighbor's yard, and they have this flowering tree in the yard. And, you know, we're all just sort of bantering around, blah, 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 having a good time. And Chuck just says, "Look at that tree. That is beautiful." We're like, "Chuck, you know, what's wrong with you, you know?" Now, a few months earlier, Chuck had met the love of his life, April. And everything in his life now had this radiance and new perspective. And I think the words love and mountaintop may be two ways to name the same reality. Now, of course, one of my favorite phrases in life, and it is incredibly useful, results may vary. And just because we travel up the physical or metaphorical mountain doesn't mean we're going to have a life-changing experience, that we will fall in love, that we will radiate beauty, or feel at one with the universe. We cannot generate mountaintop experiences. We can only prepare for them. And there's a Zen saying that says, gaining enlightenment is an accident. Spiritual practice simply makes us accident prone. Lent is a good time to be more accident prone by engaging in the three traditional disciplines, prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. These prepare us for the encounters when they happen. But like everything else, we cannot stay on top of the mountain. And of course, good old Peter, who represents most of us in the Gospels, says this would be great to stay here. And almost as soon as he does, the encounter begins to fade. Jack Kornfield is a great Buddhist teacher, and he wrote a wonderful book called After the Ecstasy, The Laundry. And it's derived from an old Buddhist idea that enlightenment experiences do not last permanently, and they're not even designed to. But he says most of the spiritual accounts of enlightenment that we hear stop there. But he wants to know, what happens after that? What happens when the Zen master returns home to her partner and children? What happens when the Christian mystic goes shopping? What is life like after the ecstasy? How do we live our understandings with a full heart? Because we come back down into the mundane, broken, imperfect world that is the only world we have to live in, and we try to live with a full heart. We are transformed, but it may not always last very long. Reminds me a bit of those glow-in-the-dark stars. You know, we had those on our kids' ceilings when they were growing up, and you turn on the light, turn it off, and they'd be nice for a few minutes, but then not much after that. My wife Lynn and I facilitated a couples retreat a few weeks back, and 16 other couples and us went away. It was less than 24 hours, but it was just an amazing experience, just being out of the routine of life and focusing on the relationship. And so we had a closing ritual at 5 o'clock on Saturday, and everybody's in a big circle. We're holding hands with our partners. People are dancing to the song. We're crying. It's this amazing love fest. But everybody knows we got to go back home. And, you know, for some couples, as soon as they got home, even on the way home, life starts to kick back in. The responsibilities, the kids, preoccupations. Richard Rohr says that for every retreat we have in life, we should have at least one confront. So the purpose of wow is not to keep having more wows. The purpose is to go back into the world, renewed to do the work that is ahead of us. One of my favorite preachers is Barbara Brown Taylor. And she says that when we hear a reading like today, the Transfiguration, we can get caught all in the mysticism of it and did it really happen? And she says, what if the point is not to decode it so much as to enter it? No one can make you go up a mountain, but if you have been looking for some excuse to head to your own mountaintop, this is it. If you've been looking for some way to trade in your old certainties for new movement in your life, now is the time to encounter God's contagious glory so that a little of that shining rubs off on you. Thomas Merton, who I mentioned earlier, who spent most of his life in some form of seclusion and removed from the world, says this about the world. Life is this simple. We are living in a world that is absolutely transparent, and God is shining through all the time. This is not just a fable or a nice story. It is true. So I'm hoping that this Lent, we can all get to do at least three things. One, take some time away to get perspective on life every day and in some form of retreat. Two, say wow as often as you can as you experience God shining in this world. And three, willingly come down from the mountain, ready to engage the world with a full heart.